from Sapporo, Japan. This is the Debito.org podcast for November 1st, 2010. Hello, everybody, and I'm sorry it's been so long. It's been about 4 months since my last podcast. Let's get right to it. The first article I'll read you tonight is from the Japan Times, Tuesday, May 5th, 2009, and it's from the community page. It's my Just Because column called Fujimori Gets His Japan Left Shamed. News item. Alberto Fujimori, former president of Peru, was sentenced last month to 25 years in prison by a Peruvian court for connections to death squads. In my humble but loud opinion, hurrah! World media headlined it as, quote, a victory for the rule of law. It was the first time an elected world leader in exile had been extradited back to his home country, tried, and found guilty of human rights abuses. Well, take that, Pinochet, Idi Amin, and Milosevic. But that's the only positive precedent set by an outlawed president who made a career of putting himself above the law. Lest we forget, Fujimori spoiled things for a lot of people, exploiting his Japanese roots in a ruthless pursuit of power. Let's have a little recap. Fujimori was elected in 1990 as South America's first leader descended from Japanese immigrants. As the Japanese government likes to claim anyone with the correct blood as one of its own, recall 2008's emigre Nobel Prize winners, out came the predictable cheers and massive investment. Given credit where credit's due, Fujimori's much ballyhooed successes included economic development, anti-terrorism programs, and a famous hostage situation at the Japanese ambassador's residence, which ended up with every insurgent executed. But Fujimori's excesses eventually caught up with him. His corrupt administration, right-hand man Vladimiro Montesinos is currently serving 20 years for bribery, skimmed at least $1 billion of public money. He also suspended parliament, purged the judiciary, and amended the constitution, allowing him to claim a hitherto illegal third term after rigged elections in 2000. 4 months later, Fujimori bailed out. On the pretext of visiting an international conference in Brunei, he surfaced in Japan, faxed a letter of resignation from his Tokyo hotel room, and claimed he was a Japanese. Legal contortionism ensued. Although Japan does not recognize dual nationality and spends at least a year deliberating bona fide naturalization applications, our government decided within 3 weeks to issue him a passport. Their reasoning? Fujimori's parents had registered his Peruvian birth with the Japanese embassy. Since he hadn't personally renounced his Japanese citizenship, he was to our justice minister, still, a Japanese citizen, and therefore immune to Peru's demands for extradition. Over the next 5 years, despite Interpol arrest warrants for murder, kidnapping, and crimes against humanity, Fujimori lived a comfortable exile in multiple residences within Japan's elite society. Supported by the likes of Tokyo Governor Shintaro Ishihara, Fujimori was for a time the toast of Tokyo, charming all manner of nationalistic authors, right-wing politicians, diplomats, and journalists with his celebrity. Meanwhile, he plotted his political comeback through the internet. He told the New York Times in 2004, quote, I live here as though I were in Peru. Well, you can't keep a bad man down. In 2005, he renewed his Peruvian passport, formally declared his candidacy for Peru's 2006 presidential election, and abandoned his safe haven of Japan for a chartered flight to Chile. Chilean authorities immediately put the fool under arrest. Then it got comical. Fujimori was trounced in Peru's presidential election, so he ran in absentia in 2007 for the Japanese Diet, under the Kokumin Shinto Party. and where he was trounced here too. Chile then extradited him to Peru for trial. In 2007, he got 6 years for abuses of power, and last month he got an additional quarter century for murder, bodily harm, and kidnapping, and there are still more trials outstanding. Well, that should put him out of harm's way. Now 70 years of age, Fujimori will be 3 digits old before he sees turnkeys, unless his daughter, ship off the old block, carries out her platform plank to become president and pardon him. Fujimori is a political vampire who makes one wish wooden stakes were part of the political process. But seriously, folks, consider the precedents set by this megalomaniac. First, Fujimori rent asunder Japan's due process for both naturalization and asylum seekers, while dozens of North Korean children of Japanese mothers who have clear blood ties to Japan remain stateless. He made it clear that Japanese elites arbitrarily enforce our laws to benefit their own. Now contrast him with fellow Nikkei in Japan. It's obviously okay for an overseas citizen with Japanese blood to assume dictatorial powers, pillage the public purse, then slither off to Japan. But how about the thousands of Nikkei Peruvian workers in Japan who are now being told, even bribed, to go home? Then, contrast him with fellow Nikkei overseas. If any Nikkei despot can parachute into Japan and be granted asylum through mere tribalism, what country would want to elect another Fujimori as head of state? Although wrong-headed and racist, this precedent hurts future prospects for Nikkei assimilation. But sociopaths like Fujimori are by definition incurious about how they affect others. Especially when granted power in young, weak, constitutional democracies, at least Peru and Chile had the sense, and the chance, to lock him up and re-establish the rule of law. Well, no thanks to Japan, of course, from whom the world expects more maturity. Rumor has it the International Olympic Committee has been nudged by rival candidate cities about Ishihara's connections with Fujimori. If this knocks Tokyo out of contention for the 2016 Olympics, well, more hurrahs for poetic justice. In sum, Fujimori is a classic case of how power corrupts. A former math teacher comes to power, comes to believe that he can do anything, then comes to a dazzlingly rich society run by elites who shelter him and further encourage his excesses. A pundit friend of mine said it well. Quote, Fujimori is an accident of birth. If he had been born in North America, he'd have been a dentist, not a dictator. At least this time, this kind of quote-unquote accident has not gone unpunished. All right, in my next article, I'll make it the last one for this podcast because it is rather long. It's from the Japan Times, Tuesday, May 19th, 2009, from the community page. This is not one of my columns. It's a Zeitgeist column entitled, I See You Bugging the Alien. New Gaijin cards could allow police to remotely track foreigners. When the Japanese government first issued alien registration cards, a.k.a. Gaijin cards, in 1952, it had one basic aim in mind, to track foreigners, at the time mostly Korean and Taiwanese people stripped of Japanese colonial citizenship, who decided to stay in post-war Japan. Gaijin cards have always put foreigners in their place. Registry is from age 16, so from a young age they were psychologically alienated from the rest of Japanese society. So what if they were born and acculturated here over many generations? They're still foreigners, full stop. Even today, when emigrant non-Japanese far outnumber the native-born, the government tends to see them all less as residents, more as something untrustworthy to police and control. Non-citizens, still, are not properly listed on residency registries. Moreover, only foreigners must carry personal information, as in name and address, personal particulars, duration of visa status, photo, and for a time, fingerprints, at all times. Gaijin cards must also be available for public inspection under threat of arrest, 1 year in jail, and 20 man in fines. However, the Diet is considering a bill abolishing those Gaijin cards. While it does sound great at first, under the proposed revisions, non-Japanese would be registered properly with residency certificates, as in Chumiho. Maximum visa durations would increase from 3 years to 5. ID cards would be revamped. Drafters claim this will, quote-unquote, protect, the Japanese word hogo, foreigners, making their access to social services more, quote-unquote, convenient. However, read the fine print. The government is in fact creating a system to police foreigners more tightly than ever. Years ago, this column, the ICU card, November 22, 2005, examined this policy in its larval stage. Its express aims have always been to target non-Japanese in the name of forestalling crime, terrorism, infectious diseases, and the scourge of illegal aliens. Foreigners, again, are trouble. But now the policy has gone pupil. You might consider helping chloroform the bug before it hatches, and here's why. The new gaijin cards, or zaidu kado in Japanese, are fundamentally unchanged. The usual suspects of biometric data, as in name, address, date of birth, visa status, name and address of workplace, photograph, etc., i.e., everything on the cover of your card, will be stored digitally on an embedded computer chip. Still extant is the 24/7 carrying requirement, backed by the same severe criminal punishments. What has changed is that punishments will now be even swifter and stricter. If you change any status recorded on your chip and don't report it to the authorities within 14 calendar days, you face a new Nijuman fine. If you don't comply within 3 months, you risk losing your visa entirely. Well, reasonable parameters? Not after you consider some scenarios. For example, graduate high school and enroll in college? Congratulations. Now, tell the government or else. Change your job or residence? Report it, even if your visa, say your permanent residency or spouse visa, allows you to work without restrictions anywhere. Get a divorce or your spouse dies? Condolences. Now dry your eyes, declare the death a marital mess right away, and give up your spouse visa. Suffering from domestic violence, so you flee to a shelter? Cue the violins. A Japanese husband can now rat on his battered foreign wife, say she's no longer at his address, and have her deported if she doesn't return to his clutches. In other words, foreigners are in a weaker position than ever. Now add on another Orwellian layer. Bureaucratic central control, or in the Japanese, Ichigen Kanri. Alien registration is currently delegated to your local ward office. Under the new system, the Ministry of Justice will handle everything. You must visit your friendly immigration bureau, there are only 65 regional offices, not even 2 per prefecture, to stand in line, report your changes, and be issued with your card. Try to get there within what works to be at a maximum of 10 work days, especially if you live in a remote area of Japan, like, say, Hokkaido or an Okinawan island. Then try to explain away a lost work day in this corporate culture. Now, consider refugees. They don't even get an ID card anymore. They won't be able to open a bank account, register to attend schools, enter hospital, or qualify for social insurance anymore. No matter, this country accepts fewer than a few dozen refugees every year. They shouldn't have come here anyway, thinking they could impose upon our peaceful, developed country. But that's still not the worst of it. I mentioned that embedded computer chip, right? The Zaidu Kado is actually a smart card. Most places worldwide issue smart cards for innocuous things like transportation and direct debit, and you have to swipe the card on a terminal to activate it. Carrying one, at least, is optional. Not in Japan. Although the 2005 proposal suggested foreign swiping stations in public buildings, the technology already exists to read IC cards remotely. With Japan's love of cutting-edge gadgets, data processing will probably not stop at the swipe. The authorities will be able to remotely scan crowds for foreigners. In other words, the IC chip is a transponder. A bug. Now imagine these scenarios. Not only can police scan and detect illegal aliens, but they can also uncover aliens of any stripe. It also means that anyone with access to IC chip scanners, and they're going pretty cheap online, actually, could possibly swipe your information, Happy to have your biometric information in the hands of thieves? Moreover, this system will further encourage racial profiling. If police see somebody who looks alien yet doesn't show up on their scanner, such as your naturalized author, or Japan's thousands of international children, they will more likely target you for questioning, as in, "Hey you, stop, why aren't you detectable?" I called the Immigration Bureau last week to talk about these issues. The resident experts on Zaidu Kaado security said that data would be protected by PIN numbers. The Bureau could not, however, answer questions about how police would enforce their next-generation Gaijin card checkpoints. Those police are a different agency, they said, and there are no concrete guidelines yet. Come again? Pass the law, and then we'll decide law enforcement procedures? This blind faith is precisely what leads to human rights abuses. One question lingers. Why would the government scrap the current alien policing system? For nearly six decades, it effectively kept foreigners officially invisible as residents, yet open to interrogation and arrest due to wallet-sized cards. So, what's broke with the system? What's broke is local government. It's too sympathetic to the needs of its non-Japanese residents. Do you remember Noriko Calderon, whose recently deported parents came to Japan on false passports? Did you ever wonder how she could attend Japanese schools and receive social services while her parents were on expired visas? Well, because local governments currently issue the Gaijin cards. At their own discretion, they can even issue ID to visa overstayers. Rendered as Zaidu Shikaku Nashi, or no status of residence, the card can be used to access social services. These people can live relatively normal lives as long as they avoid police Gaijin card checkpoints. And why are local governments so sweet? Well, with high concentrations of non-Japanese residents, many see foreigners as human beings, fancy that, needing assistance. After all, they keep local factories humming, pay taxes, and add life to local infrastructure. Hamamatsu in Shizuoka Prefecture and Yokkaichi in Mie Prefecture have long petitioned the national government for improvements, such as facilitating foreign access to public services and education, and easing registry and visa applications. After years of playing deaf, the central government took action. Under the rhetoric of smoking out, or aburidasu in the Japanese, illegal aliens, Prime Minister Junichiro Koizumi in 2005 pledged to, quote, make Japan the world's safest country again, by halving the number of visa overstayers by 2010. Never mind that the overall trend in Japan is towards devolving power to the provinces, as in Shiho Bunken. Japan now wants to rein in local governments because they poke holes in their dike. It's still a shame that the proposed plugs make life impossible for refugees and harder for any law-abiding non-Japanese resident with a busy life. Still, did you expect the leopard to change its spots? Put immigration policy in the hands of the police, and they will do just that. Police. Under a far-removed, centralized regime trained to see people as potential criminals. This is counterproductive. As we said in this column many times before, an aging Japan needs immigration. These new Gaijin cards will make already perpetually targeted foreigners, and foreign-looking Japanese for that matter, even less comfortable, even less immigrated members of society. Why stop at bugging the Gaijin? Why not just sew gold stars on their lapels and be done with it? Fortunately, policy this egregious has fomented its own protest, even within a general public that usually cares little about the livelihoods of foreigners. Major newspapers are covering the issue for a change. The opposition Democratic Party of Japan wants the bill watered down, vowing to block it until after the next general election. The Coalition NGO Committee Against Resident Alien Card System has on its banner, less policing, more genuine immigration policy that promotes multi-ethnic coexistence. On Sunday afternoon, that's when this article came out, of course, there will be a demonstration in Tokyo against new Gaijin cards. Do attend, if so inclined. All right, and that will do it for this podcast. Let me leave you, as always, with another Duran Duran tune. This is, well, this is a remix. I'll let you guess what the song is. Enjoy, and as always, thanks very much for listening. This is the Davito.org podcast for November 1st, 2010. We'll try to get one out every month from now on. It's the winter time, no summer to get outside and cycle around in. And as always, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
back.